Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now, we're up to Season 6, Episode 10 and 11. That's right, we're doing two episodes in this one. It's Chain of Command, Part 1 and 2. Directed by Robert Shearer in the first part, Les Landau in the Part 2. Written by Frank Abetamarco in Part 2. Teleplay goes to Ron Moore for Part 1. It aired back on December 14th, 1992 and December 21st, 1992. In this episode, Captain Picard is taken from command of the Enterprise for a covert mission and his replacement is assigned to deal with the Cardassians. Also noted for the torture scene of Captain Picard. Anyway, Clay is here to talk about this one, so we are going to combine both of the parts of Chain of Command into one. One podcast, one mind. Chain of Command right after this.
Well, the Enterprise will be monitoring your channel just in case you do need to transmit a signal.
Bridge to Captain Jellicoe. We've arrived at the shuttle departure coordinates.
Did you launch the probe I requested?
Yes, sir. I wasn't aware you wanted to be informed.
Thank you. Jellicoe out. I can see why he's still only a first officer.
Captain, I would just like you to know that Commander Riker...
I've read your reports, Jean-Luc. I know you think highly of him.
It's not just my opinion. He's been decorated by Starfleet Command 5 times. He's been offered his own ship more than once. I think if you just gave him a chance, you would find him an outstanding officer.
Jean-Luc, let's be candid for a moment. The Cardassians aren't going to listen to reason, and the Federation isn't going to give in to their demands. And the chances are you won't be coming back from this mission of yours. I want this ship ready for action, and I don't have time to give Will Riker or anyone else a chance. And forgive me for being blunt, but the Enterprise is mine now.
It's one of those episodes, Clay, one of those important episodes that we have to break down over the course of the next 45 minutes to an hour. It's Chain of Command. And you are fitting to do this because you love Ronnie Cox, correct?
I love Ronnie Cox.
Ronnie Cox is really good.
Ronnie Cox is good in pretty much everything he's in.
Yes, yeah. I don't know if he'd be... I can't think of anything where he's on the up and up, really. Has he ever played a character who's
interestingly enough, I believe, if I have my trivia correct, that he actually made most of his early career playing good guys. Until they cast him in RoboCop.
Oh, interesting.
And or it was possibly, I can't remember if it was RoboCop first or if it was Beverly, because he's not a good guy in Beverly Hills Cop either, right?
Right, he's like the slimy police chief or something.
I can't remember which one it was, but one of those movies, they cast him against type, and it kind of stuck.
Yeah, he's good at it. He's really good at playing the sort of the sleazy, if not sleazy, just sort of like gruff... uncompromising character. Mm-hmm. And is he still alive? Is he still acting?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, okay. He's I actually just looked him up today. He's doing a movie that's shooting this year, I think.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, Ronnie Cox still around.
For this episode, he's actually great casting because I did not trust him the entire episode.
Right.
And then at the end you're kind of like, "Oh, well he was just sort of doing his thing. He wasn't doing anything really negative."
Right. Yeah.
There was no point where he was like, "I had to kill Bob Morton because he made a mistake. Now it's time to erase that mistake.
You're fired, Bob. You're fired." Yeah. I guess let's start this off with a conversation about Jellicoe. We're talking about Chain of Command. As I mentioned in the intro, we're going to be talking about both parts to this one in this episode. So I guess, is Jellicoe a good place to start to figure him out?
Sure.
He's kind of a polarizing character on this show. I like Jellicoe. I appreciate what he brings to the show here. I appreciate what he does for this episode. I think he's written a little bit too inconclusively in this two-parter. Do you think that the show, the episode itself, thinks that Jellicoe is competent?
Are you talking about, like, from a writer's perspective?
From the way he's written in this episode, right? I think that the goal was to make him seem competent and to make him not basically just be a kind of a different captain to Picard.
Yeah.
And I think the script kind of wavers on that a little bit. And there's some scenes where it appears like he doesn't really know what he's doing.
Well, that's the thing. I was kind of wondering whether or not that was an intentional misdirect, because by the end of the first episode, I've seen these episodes before, but not in a long time. And I immediately, like I said before, as soon as Ronnie Cox showed up, I was like, oh yeah, he's going to fuck them somehow. And so by the end of the first episode, I was trying to figure out whether or not all the stuff with the incursion crew going down was like part of his mad plan to jumpstart a war or something like that. You know, it was that sort of thing I was thinking, wherein he was just doing things the way he likes to do them. There was no
there's no malice.
And I feel like that was intentional. I don't know. It's tough to say. I mean, as far as his competency, I don't think he's ever really portrayed as incompetent. I just think he's he does this thing that I noticed that happens a lot on this show, where anytime a new superior officer shows up on the ship, they immediately shake everything up, and the entire crew is like, "What's going on with this guy? There's no way we can pull this off."
Right? Yeah, he wants to go to four shifts instead of three, and everything. I think he does that to the extreme that any character has ever done it. Like that's kind of his character point is to come on. I think that this is a weird two-parter to me, because I think the tone and what's going on in each of the episodes is very, very different from each other. Like in the first part, the Jellicoe on the Enterprise stuff is really interesting, and everything that's happening on the planet is not very interesting whatsoever. And in the second part, it completely flips to the point where the stuff on the Enterprise is not very interesting to me, and the stuff that's just Picard and Golmadred is really the meat and potatoes of the episode.
Right.
And I feel that the Jellicoe character kind of goes through some kind of flip-flop, where in the first episode, he's really just sort of a by-the-book, kind of a military more captain than Picard is.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants things his way. And in the second episode, I don't understand his plan where he's playing the Cardassians. Like, he's going to start screaming, and they're going to think he's a crazy person. It never goes anywhere.
That's in the first episode, isn't it?
It is. He continues that into...
Yeah, once they pull the card on them that they captured the incursion team, then he kind of dials it down a lot. But I think, okay, so here's one thing I think we got to talk about, which might help iron some of this stuff out. By the end of the second episode, could you tell me what the hell all of this was for?
No, I think that's another point that I think this episode's always regarded as a classic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just the emotional heft of the torture scenes, because the narrative outside of the torture scenes doesn't make any sense to me about why they're doing this, why the Cardassians are torturing Picard, why any of this is happening.
Right.
And I think that, like, before, this is not to excuse it, but this is the last TNG episode to air before Deep Space Nine's pilot aired, right? So what they're trying to do is they're trying to showcase the Cardassians, who are going to be...
Is this the first episode that the Cardassians are in?
No, it's their third, I think.
Okay.
Their third episode. So we've been introduced to them before. This is the episode that mentions that they've left Bajor, the Cardassians, so that's important for Deep Space Nine. It shows their torture system. It explains how the military works in Cardassia a little bit. But outside of that, if you start to pick at what is going on and why these groups are doing what they're doing, it really stops making sense after a while.
Yeah, I think that plays into my the problem with Jellicoe. Is that Jellicoe? Is that it?
Jellicoe, yeah.
Jellicoe. The problem with Jellicoe's character is because, like, when you go back and look at it, I guess everything he said was correct. Like, he's not wrong at any point, right?
But I would have written him to be more correct. I would have written him to be super competent and just have his clash of personality be a clash of personality where the crew doesn't really get along with. I don't know what the theme of his story is outside of him screwing up stuff.
I mean, but what does he screw up, though?
No, I mean, screw up in terms of he gets the crew out of their comfort level. Okay.
But, yeah, but I mean, as far as being competent, everything that he does is right.
Yes.
The only time he's taken off track is when the Cardassians tell him that they captured Picard. I mean, his plan after that seems to be like even so he's they're looking up at all these galaxy systems or whatever, and they find one that might be of interest to the Cardassians, and he's like, "Let's go there. They're probably there, not on a science mission. They're probably there for some sort of invasion thing. Let's put a bunch of mines on their ships and then force them to get out of there and back off." And that's just what happens, and it just works.
Yeah.
There's no – unless I miss something, there's no – he's just right.
Yes, he is. I think that's the problem with the second part of the episode – the second episode that features the crew, because they really don't have any conflict to work around. To the point where they're engaged in like talks with the Cardassians, and then they just leave all of a sudden. You know, they go to that different system, and it's like, what happened there with that going on?
And then when they get to that second system, the guy that they were talking with is also there.
Is there? Yeah, he's just yeah. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, so I guess we'll start with why is Jellicoe put into this role? Like, what's the point of Jellicoe coming on the ship in terms of this narrative? Why him? You know what I mean? Like, why not any other captain? He seems to be... I'm surprised. It seems like the show is hinting that there's some ulterior motive to him.
That's what I mean. I think that was the intention, is to think that his actions are not entirely pure, but that doesn't seem to be the case.
No, that's not the case. Yeah.
He's just a demanding captain.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
And although he does have a weird fetish for counselors in Starfleet uniforms.
He does that, which is actually a fantastic thing that he does. It's his one lasting impact on it. But see, I like the Jellicoe character. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that they tried to bring in someone who is competent but is just sort of upsetting to the crew, distressing to everyone but Data, which is another beat that I really like. The Data's his, like, yes man.
Oh, yeah. That was great, yeah.
Which is really good. But I feel the fact that he's come on and sort of stirred up the crew is not enough of a story to carry his arc.
Yeah, I think there needs to be... like, there's no moment in which either he has to... Well, I mean, there's the scene with Riker where he has to ask Riker very nicely to fly the ship. But, there's no sequence in which both sides have to put aside their pride to work together.
Right.
You know? It's just, you know, he just... There's that one scene where they kind of talk to each other as men.
Yeah.
And then that's it. And then Riker just, you know, does his shit. Like, there's no repercussions, really, from the secret mission that he sends Picard on, as far as, like, anybody else in the crew finding out about it. Yeah, there's no conflict, even though it's all very, it's scheduling conflict.
Yeah.
But it's not, like, actual conflict.
No, there's no narrative really driving his sort of problem that he go. I would have had him be correct at the end as he is here, but I felt they should have, what they should have been trying to do was stress the difference between the leadership of the two captains, and that they can either both work, or because I don't think you can bring Jellicoe on and just have him fail. That doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me.
Right.
I see the episode as a chance for the rest of the crew to sort of grow as, I don't know if grow, but just sort of adapt to a new circumstance that they have to deal with. Because I don't really understand their dragging their feet with the stuff that a new captain is telling them to do, you know, at a certain point. Like, I understand Riker doesn't think it's a good idea, But didn't the guy told you to do something, and
right,
you didn't do it. So I don't know why you'd be upset by this or peeved.
Well, what would have been nice, I think, is if Jellicoe's presence and his tactics kind of shook them up and made them see that, oh, they're kind of being, you know, like if they're arguing with Jellicoe and dragging their feet caused X bad thing to happen.
Yep.
Instead, they could then use the Jellicoe's taskmaster nature as a, like, sort of like you were saying, sort of like a wake-up call that they're like, oh, shit, we need to, you know, we're in our sixth season here. We really need to get back to basics, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think that could have been interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I would, if you're trying to lead this into Deep Space Nine, I could have seen the story for Jellicoe being that he is willing to go to a lengths that the crew normally won't go to because mm-hmm. he knows this is the only way to deal with the Cardassians, sort of. Mm-hmm. Like, he's willing to push the envelope, which is kind of what they did in The Wounded when they introduced the Cardassians. It was one captain who went rogue against the Cardassians because he knew what was going on. And I feel that would have been the way to do it. Like, if the Enterprise's normal stuff doesn't work against them, and it takes this new captain, this new Jellicoe attitude to really get the job done,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of hinting at what Deep Space Nine, the different tone of the show would be. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
it shows you the weakness of the TNG ethos in what I consider to be more of a real-world situation with the Cardassians.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is he is portrayed as very sure of himself, but they also undercut it with that probably the best use of Troy I've seen in the whole season, which is where Riker says he's very sure of himself, and then then she says no, he isn't.
Right. Yep.
You know, like that. Troy's another thing that's really weird about these two episodes because she's in it a lot, but she doesn't do anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so it's like he's that scene. Why is that scene there other than to imply that he's not as sure of himself as he seems to be, but he's right all the time.
Right. I just think it undermines his character.
It does. In no way, I
would rather he be 100% sure of what he's doing. That would make more sense to me than what he's portraying on this side of showing.
Right.
Yeah. It's weird. I like the actor. I like the character. I like the way that he's sort of inserted into this. I like shaking up the ship to the point with a new captain where, you know, things aren't as hunky-dory. I think it really helps hold up a mirror to Picard in a way, mm-hmm. too, that you don't really think about. Just the way that he is much more of a laid-back personality on this ship.
You know, the one thing that would have been interesting, it would have been nice if they had picked somebody other than Worf to go on the away mission, because I feel like Worf would have been a fun character to have on the ship with Jellicoe because he probably would have been really into it.
Yeah, yep.
You know, which would have been nice to have one character who was like, oh, man, finally, someone who's taking control here. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
that
yeah.
kind of thing I think would have been pretty fun.
That's true. I don't know who else you could send. That would be the tough guy, because I do like the Data storyline as well.
Yep,
Data doesn't understand why people would be upset that they're being asked to do all these things.
Yeah.
Yeah, Worf staying behind would have been okay. I mean, we got the... Yeah, it just sort of moves into the second half of the first episode is really badly paced.
Mm-hmm.
It takes.
Can we get something out of the way right now?
Yeah,
Crusher blew that Ferengi, didn't she?
That's what's heavily implied. She, at least, I think they have a name for it. It's called like Umox or something. Is when the Ferengi get their ears rubbed.
Jesus!
So that's what goes on. That scene felt weirdly out of place. It felt like they were playing a film noir.
The first thing I thought of was I actually wrote down in my notes, here's the scene where they go get Han Solo.
Oh yeah, yeah, yep. There was Redemption where they visited the bar as well. You remember that?
Oh
episode?
Yes,
with the
yeah.
piano lady.
Oh, and they actually do. I thought of that too, because they actually do what we talked about them not doing in that one, which is using Worf as muscle.
Oh yeah,
you know,
yeah, that's true. Yeah, he does the shoulder grab and pushes them down into the seat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that scene was just 5 minutes of scene that I didn't really need to see. I guess I need to we need to understand how they get to this planet, but it ultimately...
Do you? I mean, well, so I was thinking about that, too, because after that scene, the next scene is them in the caves.
Yes, immediately. Right? Yep.
Which, you know, why do you even bother with the scene before it? The only thing I could think of is that... is the scene with the Ferengi supposed to imply that the Ferengi told the Cardassians about the mission?
No, I don't think so. But that would make sense, I guess, right?
Because they pull the Cardassians tell Jellicoe, or they make mention of the incursion mission before it actually even happens. I think.
No,
I think
they mention it afterwards. They
are you sure? Because I thought there was, I thought like before they really got into it. I think they were on the planet, but I think before they really get into it, before the Cardassians show up, I thought the guy that they were negotiating with was like, well, it would be really weird if you guys, if we happen to find, you know, I don't know, like an away team on our planet doing some really shady shit. You know, so it sounded like they knew that it was happening.
Yep.
But then later on, you find out it was all a trap, I guess.
Right. I think the trap is what's implying why they know it's happening.
Oh, okay.
I guess. Like right.
Yeah, that's true.
I guess they're just assuming that it's gone through. I can't remember exactly if we see one scene of them on the planet before they mention that to them. Mm-hmm.
Well, in that case, then I don't. That Ferengi scene is kind of pointless.
Yeah, it's pointless. I don't think he betrays them. I don't read it that way. The first episode suffers from it. Really doesn't feel like there's enough plot to carry through with the time that they have. Like they're basically just going through the cave. They solve like three minor problems in the cave. You know, they go down, they rappel down the side. Rocks fall on Beverly.
She is surprisingly unharmed by a lot of rocks falling on her.
And yeah, just. It is a lot of rocks, and she's buried deep, and she comes out and just is, well, woo, that's all you need to do.
I was really happy that they used her, too. I mean, I think this is one of the more active episodes that I've seen her in, and I thought she was pretty good.
Yeah, it makes sense for her role, right? She has to go as the sort of biological specialist, I guess, that would be dealing with this type of thing.
Well, yeah. I'm sure the way they did it was they picked the team, and they were like, all right, why is Beverly on this team?
Yeah.
Right. I don't know. They're making some sort of medical weapon.
I like Picard's thing. Mr. Worf, your reason for being here is obvious when he explains the mission, which is good.
The Cardassians are developing a flu bomb.
I think that the scope of what they're doing on the planet makes sense. It's just boring shot. Like, it's not exciting to watch.
Yeah.
Even though I know that... it's kind of interesting what they're doing. They just don't run into any real problems as they're going through the system until the very end.
I kind of wish they had spent more time doing the training stuff, actually. I thought that stuff was pretty interesting. Also, I think probably the best non-sex use of the holodeck.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's a pure training thing.
Yeah. That stuff was interesting because, I don't know, you don't really see that stuff. You know, it kind of had a... you know, a heist movie kind of feel to it.
Yes, yeah, that's true. I would have had them do more training just because I feel like we needed more Picard Jellicoe scenes. I think that would have been a strong thing to do.
And also, again, I don't know who knew what about when in this story because, you know, Jellicoe pulls Picard aside during their, you know, really lame ass ceremony that they had. And he's like, so is how's everything going? Is the secret mission still on? He's
right.
Like, yeah, no, we're ready to go. And then later on, when Riker goes into Picard's ready room after Picard gets back from training, he's dressed in all black, clearly out of breath. And Riker doesn't even question what was like. And Picard says, oh, I haven't been this tired since I was
running
training for something in the academy. And and Riker's like, well, I'll let you go. Have a shower and... I'll see you later.
Don't want to bother you.
I don't understand. Does Riker know about this mission? Because he clearly was not told about it when they were... I don't know.
No, I don't think he does. But he also, when they get captured and the Cardassians are like, we've captured Captain Picard, Riker immediately goes, do you have Captain Picard? Like, he betrays the fact that there was a group down there immediately.
Riker doesn't play it cool at all. It's like, we have captured Jean-Luc Picard. Is he dead?
Did you kill him? Where is he? Yeah, I feel that the I feel that plot line just isn't really very strong. This episode introduces Admiral Nechayev, which is the woman admiral, who's a recurring character. She's like the difficult admiral to a T. That's kind of her thing.
Does Ronnie Cox ever come back in Deep Space Nine or anything?
No, he does not. That's bummer. He had a lot to say about this episode, though. It was interesting.
Oh, really?
It seems like he had a good time.
The only other thing I was going to say is it would have been nice if there was some sort of conflict over whether or not them going on this mission was a good idea. You know, I know that the whole thing is like, you know, you have to go on the secret mission. But where clearly the stakes at play here are like intergalactic war.
Yep.
You know, you're working on a peace conference, but you're also sending in this covert team to do X, Y, and Z. I feel like there could have been a little bit more there. Like, let Riker find out about it and have him another thing that he and Jellicoe clash on, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. I think that should have been the Jellicoe role, right? Like, I think they should have been... The captains have two very different opinions about how to deal with this threat, and they each get sent on sort of the wrong mission. You know what I mean? Like Picard gets sent as the espionage guy instead of doing the diplomacy, and Jellicoe is stuck doing the diplomacy. I think that kind of makes sense. Like, you show the two sort of angles as to what they're going on, and both of the personalities are not quite equipped to deal with it, even though... part two shows that Picard is equipped to deal with anything, basically. that would have been interesting to me. I just feel like the Jellicoe storyline doesn't pair well enough with what they do for the Picard storyline. And it's a little bit disappointing. So should we get into part two? Because we've done 20 minutes on part one.
Sure, let's do it.
Yeah, so part two is the better episode, right? Would you agree or disagree with that?
Oh, one more thing about part one.
Sure.
When... What's that giant book that he tells Jean-Luc to take with him?
I don't know. Everyone spends a good deal of time thumping it, though. Yeah. Like, with their hands. Just giving it a good thump.
I know you can only take no more than 5 pounds worth of stuff down to the planet, but don't forget your giant tome.
But Riker's reading it later on in his when he's being dressed down. He's reading it.
Is that what he's reading?
Yeah, he's reading that book.
Oh, right.
So he didn't take it. He just left it. He gave it to Riker, I guess.
Anyway, okay. Part two.
Part two is the better episode. Agree or disagree?
Yeah.
Part two is the better episode.
I
think that the first episode is pretty good, all things considered.
It's good. I think this is probably the only time so far, anyway, where a second half of a two-parter has been better than the first half.
Yeah, and I want to give you a little bit of trivia for this. This was originally only a single episode where Picard is rescued at the very end of the episode. That episode would have been terrible, right?
Yeah.
There would be no torture scenes in the...
That's dumb.
It would be really dumb.
That's the whole point of the episode.
It would make Jellicoe even less of a point. Basically, there would be no point for Jellicoe to be on the ship at that point if it was that quick.
That would be real bad.
And they were over budget at this point. So they decided to make it a two-parter, where the second episode would really just be a very tiny bottle episode. And what it turns into is essentially 80% of it is a two-man play between Madred, who's the Cardassian, and Picard in this sort of office room.
Shades of Once Upon a Time from The Prisoner, a little bit.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. Shades of... it's definitely wearing its homages on its sleeve. Shades of... 1984 with the how many fingers am I holding up reference. So I think that the part two, the torture scene, is probably one of the most emotionally affecting stories that the show has ever done.
Yeah.
To a point where it impacts my watching the first part, where you're watching Picard as he's about to get into this mission where he's going to get captured. It kind of hits you with that like knot in your stomach thing. The show rarely does this, which is shocking to me on this rewatch, how little the episodes sort of have like a true emotional resonance with me. And it's interesting that this one manages to do it. It does it through a very easy mechanism. You know, torture is not a difficult sell in that regard.
Yeah.
To a main character. So I don't know. Well, what'd you think in general?
Well, apparently they figured out the key to a good two-parter is to have the first part end with Picard getting captured.
Yeah, that's true, too. With some great dramatic music, too. I like the music that ends this one as well.
Yeah.
I always mistake it, though. I always remember it being, and I think this would have been a better ending. The first scene in part two where the Cardassians sort of reveal what they do. They say they're only going to call him human. They like strip him naked and hang him from the ceiling. Mm-hmm. I think that should have been the ending of part one.
Yeah, I think that would have been good. If they had cut that Ferengi scene, maybe they could have done that.
Right.
Yeah, because I think if I had to call out one flaw, I don't even want to call it a flaw, but like storytelling flaw of the second half is that you don't really have any concept of how much time has passed.
No, you don't. Yeah.
And it seems like not much time has passed. So if they had ended the first episode with him being hung from that thing, then you've got a whole week to yourself. I mean, shit, even between episodes, you could put a week, you could put 2 months, you know, anything could be in there. It feels, having it be separated by a break in episodes implies a passage of time.
Yeah, that's true.
That is not there otherwise, because you know, I mean, you could kind of probably do it out mathematically if you figure out how long it takes the Enterprise to fly 11 light years to this place, drop a bunch of mines, and then fly 11 light years back.
Yep.
But yeah, that's probably the one flaw, is that the amount of brainwashing that happens in 40 minutes is kind of, you know, they could have probably paced it a little better that way.
Yeah, but, yeah.
I think the key to this working is great casting. And man, David Warner is the fucking man. He is awesome.
Yeah, he plays Madred, obviously. Yes. Yeah, he's very, very good in this one.
You might know him as the scientist from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze.
Sure. He's in Undiscovered Country and Final Frontier, the Star
That's
Trek
right.
movies.
Yeah.
He's been in a few things.
He's also the bad guy in the original Tron.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. he's got the gravitas, and he pairs well with Stewart, I think.
Yeah, I think their back and forth is really good.
Yeah.
Like they are definitely on the same page.
The sort of overriding arc of the Cardassians is sort of a civilized brutality. They're sort of Bondian to me. They remind me of James Bond villains. Like, they explain what they're doing
to
you as they're doing it. And I think they're set up here really well. You get a slight hint of what Cardassia is all about.
Mm-hmm.
It's a military coup that took over a once thriving civilization that was starving.
Right.
They had, you know, great wealth and great like architecture and great art, and the military's basically sold it all to finance these wars.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
you know, what's interesting to me is that when he was telling that story, I was kind of thinking that feels kind of like a dark mirror version of the Federation.
It's true, yeah.
Because, you know, where the Cardassians sold and purged their civilization of all of its culture in order to get money to finance a war, you know, the humans on Earth did the exact opposite of that, where they basically got rid of money,
right?
So they could focus on culture and, you know, spreading their culture and learning and science and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
Interestingly, both end up on warships. So I don't know what that says, but it's interesting.
Yeah, that's a good point about them. They are sort of like inverses of each other in an interesting way.
More so than any other, at least from what I got from this episode, more so than any other species. I mean, the Klingons are not really that way, and the Vulcans are not really that way. These guys seem like they're an interesting inverse.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, do you think this episode sets them up pretty well as a potential villain?
Yeah, I think it does.
I think it does, too. I think it provides you with the right amount of information about them. They don't super explain everything. They just drop a couple lines here or there about what's going on. They show you what they're capable of and what their sort of like ethos is, what their MO would be going forward.
Their design is great too.
Yeah,
it's really good.
Spoonheads, as they're called in that's sort of their racist nickname or whatever in the universe. Yeah, the gray skin color and everything is a very interesting choice. One of them, very, very dark. I would say that the tougher part for me about the torture scenes is narratively, it doesn't really clarify why they're doing it. And I think it says that they're doing it for a couple reasons a few times. Because Picard obviously knows nothing about Minos Corva. They learn that immediately.
Yeah.
But they keep coming back to the knowledge about Minos Corva, and I don't really understand why at a certain point.
Yeah, I have no idea. Because, I mean, even at the end, at the end, clearly he's just trying to break him because he wants the satisfaction of having broken him.
Yep.
But, yeah, I don't know what the point is, really.
Well, when he threatens to bring Beverly in, and he's like, I'll ask her what she knows about Minos Corva.
Yeah.
It's like, we know you don't care about Minos Corva. I wish the plot had just accepted the fact that they were doing this just as sort of a power play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they took the face of the Federation and they made him a broken man. They don't really go with that. They continue to go down this path. I don't know if that would have been too dark, if they thought that was too dark, but it doesn't change what they did, ultimately.
Well, I don't know if it's any more dark than turning him into a Borg and having him kill a bunch of people.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like they kind of, it ends up going down that path, but it's not really explicitly stated.
Yep.
That's one of the other reasons why at the end of this whole thing, I was like, what the hell was this all for? Because I didn't know if they were torturing him just to break him. Because, like you said, the information they want from him, he clearly doesn't have. So I don't know.
Yeah, right. And you don't get a good sense at the end of where the two parties have. I mean, this is by far the episode that the show becoming serialized, it becomes absurd. You know, at a certain point where Picard is in Ship in a Bottle after this episode. He's just back to normal. You know what I mean? Like nothing really happened. Like even the ending here, while I appreciate what they did, it just makes it so hard to sort of grasp what the episode is about because I wish they had sort of explained what the Cardassians were trying to do in a way. Like, I don't know.
You know, now that I'm thinking about it, hearing that this was originally one episode, I feel like that kind of explains it a little bit because it seems like they had their original setup and then once they had to pad it out and they put this torture sequence in, that became the thing that they were most interested in exploring.
Yeah.
And they kind of just, like, dropped the other shit to the side.
Yes, yeah. I think that clearly happened, which is... I just needed them to sort of finish the arc of what the Cardassians were trying to do or clarify it a little bit. That would have made me happy. Because, at a certain point, it's like... The torture's funny because it's clearly... Like, it's not a nuanced argument. You know what I mean? There's no really no argument for what they're doing to Picard in this case.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he has information that the Cardassians consider to be super relevant or anything like that. So it's
the Enterprise doesn't even know. There's literally a scene where they're like, why do they have him? What do they want? And they're like, I don't know. He doesn't know anything.
Right. He's asking for plans for the defense of Minos Corva, right? And apparently there are no ships in Minos Corva. Like the Enterprise has to go there. So why are the Cardassians so concerned about it? Because it doesn't seem like the Federation has any idea that it's important to them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, I guess what was the thing that they said? They were like, oh, well, maybe it's something that he's going to do. And
oh, right. Yeah, with Jellicoe.
The Enterprise would be the ship that they send to...
It would be the
Minos Corva.
It would be the flagship at a battle. Yeah. So
yeah.
Picard. I don't understand why they chose Picard. Basically, outside of the fact that he's the main character of the show.
Yep.
He doesn't know the reason they pick him is because apparently he's the only person who knows about this kind of radiation that they can trap people with, but that doesn't provide any information as to the rest of the plot. He doesn't know anything.
Nope.
So that, it's just, yeah, it's a weird decision outside of that. I mean, do you think that the narrative Do you think that that narrative weakness affects the overall quality of the episodes put together? Or do you think that the torture stuff is strong enough to outshine that in some ways?
Yeah, I think it's pretty strong. I don't know. That's real tough. Cause I mean, if you're watching this specifically to pay attention to the narrative through line, you're going to get to the end and be like, what the hell was that about?
Right.
But I think the individual elements are good enough. And the torture stuff specifically is very good. That it kind of gets a bit of a pass.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. I feel the same way. I think the emotionality of it sort of distracts you from the narrative.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's like when you're playing music, you know, if there's a difference between playing all the notes correctly and playing the notes with emotion and screwing up every now and
right,
then.
Right, yeah.
And I would much what's that?
Just like as a musician would say, playing correctly, you know, like this quote is correctly and then there's correctly, I guess.
Right. And I would much rather, at least in this instance, well, I don't know. It's tough because I think if the narrative had been better, this whole thing would have been much, it would have been better.
Yep.
But I'm not going to take anything away from it because they do stick the landing on a few, or I should say they don't stick the landing. They put some really good flips in there, even if they kind of, you know, buckle their knee a little bit when they hit the floor.
Yeah. You know what I'm, now that I'm thinking about it, I wonder if this was the case and if this would be too dark. What I'm kind of surprised by is that getting Picard back is not a conundrum for the Federation. You know what I mean? They kind of pay lip service to it that they're like, oh, if you say he's a prisoner of war, they can't torture him.
Mm-hmm.
Jellicoe doesn't really have a good excuse for why they wouldn't just do that. You know what I mean?
Why they wouldn't say he's a prisoner of war?
Why they wouldn't say that he was on Federation orders to get...
Well, I guess it would, because that would imply that the Federation sent him to do that, which is a warlike aggression on someone you have a peace treaty with or something, right?
I guess. It's just it feels a little bit flimsy to me that I feel like they could have gone through and given the Federation some way to get him back, that because they don't even really negotiate as a hostage. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they're like, give us this sector and you can get him back. There's no ultimatum whatsoever to it.
You know, why they don't really use him as bargaining chip at all.
Right.
Why don't they say that they killed him? Or that he, you know, like, why don't they, I feel like if they had played it as though he was dead, it would add, excuse me, a little bit more urgency to the other stuff. You know, like if they somehow then figure out that he's not dead and, you know, I don't know. Like it seemed like there could have been some room in there to, like you said, make some sort of decision or some sort of conflict about the fate of Picard.
It would also, that would put Jellicoe into, you know, air quotes, permanent position. The crew would have to accept him, you know,
right,
if Picard is dead.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's weird that there's no... It's not, you know, the way to do it, like, if the Cardassians are like, we'll give him back to you if you do this thing that is against your values as the Federation.
Yeah.
You know, like, they never push that button on them.
Right.
And it's kind of surprising to me that would give you, the Federation could stick to their ideals and not trade him to get the hostage back, which makes it all the more, you know, sort of upsetting as an audience member that they could rescue him and they're not.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a little bit odd to me that it's a strange thing that they decided not to go with, and I don't know why particularly.
Yeah, and I think Picard could have been a good a good pivot point I guess conflict in my brain is
he's like the
blank of me,
like the cornerstone to the conflict,
yeah,
or something.
Between Jellicoe and the crew, in that if Jellicoe says Jellicoe doesn't want to go after him, or let's say they do say that he's dead, Jellicoe says we have to assume that he's dead, right?
Yep.
And then the crew is like, no, he's not dead, we have to go after him. then it would turn out that this is at least one point where Jellicoe is not correct and did not make the right decision.
Right.
You know, so there could have been that sort of back and forth a little bit. I don't know. But I don't know if that's just, you know, making things too complicated.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think what we're sort of hinting at is that it feels
the
like
episodes are garbage. Yeah, and they should be stricken from the all Blu-ray boxes.
One out of five. It's I think what we're sort of hinting at is it feels like it's just missing one narrative thread that would tie everything together.
Yep.
And it's just not there. As cool as the sort of sequences are and as cool as the ideas are, and I like Jellicoe. I like the Cardassian stuff. I like all that. It feels like it's just playing on the emotions of the whole event as opposed to the story structure.
You know what would have been nice too? I don't know if this you know really ties a lot up, but it might have helped a little bit if there had been a scene with the guy, the Cardassian who they're bargaining with, and David Warner, because that stuff feels so separate.
Yes,
that it would have been nice if there had been a scene between those two guys, so you had some idea of what they were looking for and why, and David Warner's reasons for continuing to torture him. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Because at the end when they come in, clearly they're like, "What the hell are you doing? We told him that we're clearly he's disobeying orders or not doing things the way they should be doing."
Yep.
So it would be interesting if they had set him up as like some sort of weird Mengele character or something.
Yeah, by the end you get the impression that he's not the highest ranking, which seems like it seems to me as you're watching it that he would be the highest ranking Cardassian in a way.
Yeah,
but he seems more of just sort of a middleman interrogator, I guess. By the way that I was judging the way that the negotiating Cardassian was talking to him at the end.
Right. Yeah.
Which I guess ties into the whole. You know, because Picard has that scene where he's like, "I picture you as a 6-year-old boy who can defend himself," and it kind of ties it into that potentially. But I don't know. It's interesting anyway.
Or at least have they could have given him some sort of line about having some sort of innate hatred towards the Federation or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yep.
You know, something, because he's clearly trying to prove a point. By the end of it, and getting a better idea of what that point is, might have helped. Unless I completely missed it, which is possible.
No, I don't. I don't think he had an overall point. I kind of wish that they did. I kind of wish that they had clarified it a little bit. Because as good as the torture stuff is, it does feel like it's just missing that one sort of reason. And I guess the counter argument people would be that's the kind of statement they're making on torture, I guess. But that feels a little bit childish to me, if that's what you're going to – if you're going to say that. Because I'm sure there is a sort of counter-argument that torture is so bad that the episode is just harping on how bad it is. You know what I mean? And it doesn't need to go outside of that, which I kind of disagree with. I kind of think that you need some kind of motivation to make all this make sense.
They don't really take much of a stand on it. It's just sort of a plot point, you know?
Yeah, it's barely... Picard sort of throws it out there that it's outlawed, you know, a couple times. That's about it. But they don't really... They don't focus on it. The crew is not particularly concerned about the potential for torture, it seems like. And judging by knowing the Cardassians, it seems like it would be something they should be aware of. Yeah, it's interesting. Anyway... I think we're done with breaking down Chain of Command. So I'm going to play an audio clip. We're going to come back. We're going to give our final thoughts and ratings for Chain of Command.
Whenever I look at you now, I won't see a powerful Cardassian warrior. I will see a 6-year-old boy who is powerless to protect himself.
Be quiet!
In spite of all you've done to me, I find you a pitiable man.
Picard, stop it, or I will turn this on and leave you in agony all night.
Ah, you call me Picard. What are the Federation's defense plans for Minos Corva?
There are 4 lights.
There are 5 lights. How many do you see now?
You are 6 years old.
weak and helpless. You cannot hurt me.
How many?
Sir Paul Davignon.
All right, so this is our first two-parter that we're doing as one episode. So I'm gonna rank each one on its own merits. But if you guys are interested and you're watching on YouTube, you can click in the upper right-hand corner of the video. Click the little link there. It'll bring up a poll. You can vote on what you think for, as a total, what you think these episodes are scaled. I'm going to say that the first part is slightly weaker than the second part. But the first part is still good. Especially the first half of the first part is very, very good. Mm-hmm. Jellicoe's introduction is really good. I give the first part a 4 out of 5, I think. I'm going to give the second one, it's kind of a weak 5, the second part of this. I think this episode's important, but I don't think it's one of the best Star Trek episodes that they've done. And I think it's good. I don't know. I feel like it has a kind of gravitas in the culture that makes sense to me, but at the same time, it's not. Like, I think Sarek is almost a better episode, and it's much smaller than this one, but I don't know. What'd you think? What are you going to give them?
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I would say the first half is not as good as the second half. Second half is really good. I mean, honestly, I would give it a 5 just for the interrogation stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just really good.
Yep.
You know? I mean, they get really weird with it, which is fun. You know, that's kind of what we were saying the last episode I was on, is wish it would, they would push things and get a little weird, and they do in this one, which is nice.
Yeah, definitely the darkest the show has ever gone, right? I can't think of anything more dark than this. Maybe resurrecting Yar and then killing her again is potentially the only the only crueler thing that we've seen so far, but it's
not if not just that they resurrected and killed her, but the way that they killed her.
That's right. Resurrector, raper, bear child, and then executor. That'll be good.
Yep, yep, yep.
That's good. And this episode is a little bit shocking to me, just in its tone compared to all 100 and whatever episodes before it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really out of the blue, like how dark this went all of a sudden. And I appreciate it. I think it's interesting that the show did it, but it's really noticeable how different this tone is from everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's a I'd probably give it a 5 for the two parts, but I do think that the first part is a little bit weaker, so I'll give that one a 4 and the second part a 5.
I do have a story I'd like to tell.
Sure.
So last year at the New York Comic Con, I'm hanging out with Sean Murphy, friend of the show, and he's taking us around Brooklyn, where he lived at the time, and of course, because he's a creep, he knows where Patrick Stewart lives.
Sure.
And he says, you want to see Patrick Stewart's house? And we say, yeah, sure, why not? Who doesn't want to see Patrick Stewart's house? So we go over there, and as we're coming up on it, I notice something outside on the building. I start counting the lights on the building.
Yep.
There are 5 lighting fixtures on his building, but only 4 of them were lit up.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I know, right?
If I had played Picard, there's no way I couldn't do that on the outside of my house. Yeah, that's fantastic. So I guess on the philosophical level, were there 4 or were there 5 lights?
I mean, technically there were only 4 lights.
It's 4 light sources.
But I saw 5 lights, but there were only 4 lights.
Right.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, I completely. Yeah, that's pretty crazy, and hopefully that's intentional. I doubt Sir Patrick Stewart would do that, but that is fantastic.
That would be amazing if he moved in and was like, first things first, unscrew 1 light bulb.
He just smashes it with his cane. He's just spring. What do you think of the "there are 4 lights" delivery?
At the last one,
yeah,
I thought it was good.
I would have had him reshoot it. If I was the director.
So?
Yeah, I would have been like, you need to tone it down a little
bit. Tone it down?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like he's clearly at the breaking point. Like, that look he has on his face is the look of, like, you know, a confused animal.
Yes, yeah.
I was actually going to say, I think his pain acting not just in this episode, but in most episodes, is really good.
Yes.
Because he never does like just a "ah" and falls over. He always does like a "ah," you know,
yep.
And like convulses in a really weird way. Now, he's good at that.
And he has to sell a device that we can't even comprehend, really. Yeah. You know, like it's like, at least, you know, in like,
have powers beyond their comprehension.
Game of Thrones, it's like you're actually like putting a screw through Theon's foot or whatever. Like, yeah, you're like, oh, yeah, I can comprehend how that would feel.
I understand the concept of getting a dick cut off.
That's something that hits close to home. And, you know, as another Game of Thrones comparison, thank God they finished this over a course of 2 episodes as opposed to 12 episodes of having to watch this. So that's my one Game of Thrones criticism. But
well, the difference would be, it would be if every character on the Enterprise had their own season-long arc we had to touch on.
Right. Just get cut back and forth between Riker learning the trombone and moving around. Yeah, I'm surprised I didn't remember because it's always something I wanted to talk about. I'll talk about it for just a minute. I feel that final "there are four lights." I just wish it was a little bit toned down or something. I don't know. People seem to love it. It's an iconic line, right? Is there?
Yeah.
It's like a Jeopardy type question line. Like, how many lights are there? And obviously, if you're not up to narrative, a direct homage to 1984, where Winston asks, I can't remember the guy's name, but the main character, how many fingers he's holding up, and he holds up 4 and says there are 5.
Yeah.
So it's a direct reference to that. Really well done kind of reference. And I also would have – the thing, when Picard walks out at the final, there's a shot back on Madrid, and he sort of gives himself like a little smile. Mm-hmm. I would not have filmed that either.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, he probably needs to be like in the worst possible state when he leaves.
Yes, he needs to be disappointed.
Although, I don't know. I mean, he's doing that specifically cuz he beat him, you know, which I think I'm okay with that.
Sorry, who beat who?
You're talking about Picard makes a little smile?
No, the Cardassian smiles to him.
Oh, sorry.
The torturer gives him, as Picard's walking out, he gives himself like a little like smile, like, oh, this guy, he beat me. Like, he appreciates being bested.
Oh, okay. In my head, I got a picture of Picard smiling, which actually doesn't make, which makes kind of some sense and would have been interesting to put in.
That makes more sense to me because, yeah, Picard would be. But no, he just snaps back to being okay again, as he did in Best of Both Worlds. He talks to Troy and admits that he saw 5 lights. Do you agree with the ending? Is that the way they should have ended the show?
Yeah. I mean, it's a good. Well, I guess it depends on how you look at it, because I think it's a great ending, but it makes me question the sanity of the captain of the ship a little bit. But I think it's interesting. I think it needed that sort of. He bounces back so quickly when they bring him back to the Enterprise that I think they needed some sort of coda at the end.
Yeah, lasting repercussions. I think the only reason it doesn't work quite as well as how serialized or how non-serialized the show is. If it was a season-long arc, his admitting that, would make a lot more sense to me. Mm-hmm. At the end. I think it's the only way that they could have ended the show, but it's just a little bit odd.
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed the content, you're on YouTube, like and comments. Appreciate it. If you're on iTunes, a rating review helps get the show out there. You can go to facebook.com/thepenskypodcast. If you want to talk to us on Facebook, you can go to patreon.com/thepenskypodcast. If you want to donate a couple dollars and get exclusive content, we just talked about Galaxy Quest, me and you, right?
Oh, yeah.
People seem to like that. So that's up now. If you donate to the Patreon, I'll send you a link to get access to that. But we talk about Galaxy Quest, the Tim Allen movie from 1999, Star Trek homage.
Never give up, never surrender, unless you're talking about your money, in which case, do both to Wes.
I think when Madrid was using that device, Picard should have been shaking, just going, never get up. Never surrender. If that was just the catchphrase he said to himself. Yeah, but that's it. Guys, thank you very much for supporting the show. Thank you for listening. Clay, thank you very much for coming on to discuss Chain of Command.
No problem. What do you got coming up next?
We have Tana and Sean are here for Ship in a Bottle, which is the Moriarty episode, is next.
Oh, that should be good. I'm probably not going to listen to it.
I wouldn't recommend it. They have some crazy, crazy things to say. And then after that, we got Modi for a couple episodes. So then we are burning through season 6. But yeah, either listen to a couple days, you can listen to Tana Sean, or if you're Clay, don't listen to them. And don't listen to any of the podcasts. Anyway, guys, thank you very much. I will see you later.